We're talking about a book called Mindhunter, Inside the FBI Elite Serial Crime Unit. Well, co-author Mark Olshaker will be talking to us in just a few moments. Introduces us to the FBI special agent, an expert in criminal profiling and behavioral science. His co-author, John Douglas, who's the man who's looked at in the evil in the eye and made a vocation of understanding it. Well, he's retired now, but Douglas and let us inside the FBI Elite Serial Crime Unit into the disturbed minds of some of the most savage serial killers in the world. Well, it's a pleasure to have on the line, in fact, you say your co-author, John can't be with us on the programme today, but Mark Olshaker, is very, very happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, look, this sort of thing is so, so popular, fascinates people. And tell us a little bit more about how the book came together and, of course, obviously your background as well, if you can explain it to us.
Well, I am a writer, an author, and documentary filmmaker by trade. And around the time that the movie of Silence of the Lambs was in production, mm-hmm. I thought this would be a... I'd written several thriller novels and detective novels, and I also worked for NOVA, the PBS science series in the United States, yeah. Public broadcasting. And so I suggested to them that before the movie came out, we should do a documentary about what the real profilers were like, the people behind Silence of the Lambs. We did a film called Mind of a Serial Killer, which did very well on American television, was actually shown in the UK as well, yeah. And I think other European countries. And when John Douglas, the legendary profiling pioneer, got ready to retire, he asked me if I thought anybody would be interested in his story, and I said, well, I certainly am. Let's test it out. And out of that came Mindhunter and seven books since then. So clearly you're right. There is a continual fascination with this kind of story and behavior.
So really you working as a team now. I mean, obviously he had
yes.
all of the stories to tell, and you were able to sort of put those into book form, into a readable form, and obviously gave everybody the opportunity to hear John's stories in this instance.
That's right.
Now, obviously, we'll go back to Silence of the Lambs and, and some of those kind of stories, and lots of documentaries have been around as well, haven't they, about mm-hmm. about what is
sure.
happening in these special FBI units, and mm-hmm. you think to yourself, well, I've heard everything, but no, you haven't.
Well, unfortunately, that's true, and I think you've hit on really one of the reasons that people are so fascinated by this subject, and I think the reason is because this is about what we call the human condition, all the things that we normally feel, love, hate, jealousy, revenge, lust for money, lust for power, lust for sex, all of these things, and yet they're at the extremes of human behavior. They're writ large. Most of us have systems that limit us, that prevent us from doing these antisocial things just because we may feel that way. But there's a certain percentage of the population that doesn't, that feels they can do anything they want. They usually, almost all of these serial killers have a combination of grandiosity, entitlement, feeling that the world has not given them their due, and at the same time they feel this deep-seated inadequacy, which can only be fueled by getting to manipulate, dominate, and control somebody else.
Well, obviously, sort of being in that elite force and having to sort of deal with these kind of if individuals on a day to day basis. I mean, it's another aspect of life that majority of people just are not aware of, are they?
That's absolutely true, and I think it certainly takes its toll on the people who practice this because remember, everybody talks about, you've got to be able to get into the mind of the killer. Well, that's one thing, and that's true, but a lot of detectives can do that. These people also have to get into the minds of the victims and go through what they went through, the horrible suffering, the aloneness, the just utter desperation, and that takes its psychological and often its physical toll as well.
I thought that was very well put across in the TV series, the first series of True Detective, I think it was. I think it was American
well,
series.
Well, it was, and
Matthew McConaughey.
Now Mindhunter is a series on Netflix mm-hmm. and going worldwide, and we're very happy with the way David Fincher and his director David Fincher and his team have rendered Mindhunter for television as well.
Now, you're obviously sort of continuing to sort of write these books by the sound of it there, Mark, and I can imagine that when you sort of get, I say, coming from John or somebody else, I mean, are you sort of in demand for that kind of link up, that kind of association and collaboration?
Well, it does seem that way. I
do, nothing to worry about then, eh?
I do get offers all the time, but just working with John is
full time.
That's enough for right now. I've written other books recently. One with a man named Dr. Michael Osterholm from the University of Minnesota about public health and pandemics. But in a way, it's the same kind of thing. It's another kind of detective story where the odds, where it's a life and death story, and the odds are really great. So that's the kind of thing I seem to be working on now: sex, violence, and pestilence.
Well,
I feel kind of like a stable boy for the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Oh my goodness me! The fascinating thing about it all is the fact that when we watch these TV series or these one-off features where sort of profiling of a criminal mind or a serial killer, trying to understand and trying to sort of see, crikey, trying to get inside these people's heads and sort of and make it make themselves sort of feel as though they're understanding what may be in their heads. I mean, there was a recent TV series called Mr. Mercedes, which was brilliantly done by Brendan Gleeson, the Irish actor, and you had this. He was trying to sort of actually find and work, and obviously got so closely involved. Does this ever happen? Do you ever get situations where a serial killer's out there, and they've got a policeman or an FBI agent sort of after them, and they try and make contact?
Oh, sure. That's one of the things you try to do. It's what we call the proactive technique. There's all kinds of ways to try to get serial killers or predators of any kind to come forward. I mean, one of the cases that you may know about, it's called the BTK case in Wichita, Kansas, in the United States, which name he gave himself. It stands for bind, torture, and kill. These kind of crimes were the most important thing in this man's life, and clearly he wanted to communicate with the police and the media and brag about it. And the way he was finally caught was he just went too far, and the police were able to tease him out and get him to identify himself unwittingly.
I suppose this is in a way another weapon in the hands of the authorities.
Absolutely.
And of course, with technology being so advanced now, with computers and people can sort of hack into phones and do all that kind of thing, you've obviously got situations where these kind of criminals are using that as well in their arsenal.
I'm sure they are. But, you know, science goes both ways, because we have what we call in the United States now the CSI effect. Do you have the show CSI?
Oh, my goodness. It's all over the place. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
it's been for years.
the problem for prosecutors now is, because of shows like CSI, juries are expecting all kinds of physical evidence, whether it's DNA evidence, hair and fiber, fingerprints, and the reality is that most crimes don't have that kind of information available.
Mm-hmm.
So based on finding this kind of evidence and wrapping up a case in 30 minutes, juries often are expecting that, and it doesn't happen in real life. So science can go both ways.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I think there should be a disclaimer at the end of these CSI series, because they never wear protective clothing. They never put gloves on, but they're never walking around with their usual shoes. They're not putting on. They're contaminating the crime scene. All I think, my goodness me, this can't be real.
You're very good. You could be a detective yourself.
Mark, what's your current project, or what's your next project, obviously, in writing and obviously looking at what's coming
up in
TV and film?
Since you mention it, we're working on a book now that's kind of about the diving deep into the subject that the first season of Mindhunter went into, which is how do you actually interview incarcerated criminals and get information from them? What is the technique? We're showing how John did it in a number of cases, and you really get a sense of what these people are like, the logic that they use, which is not our logic necessarily, and it'll be quite a harrowing journey, I'm sure.
Well, of course, the wonderful scene is Silence of the Lambs with a bottle of Chianti in.
Absolutely. Now, fortunately, let me give one disclaimer of my own, which
okay.
is that fortunately there are no serial killers on the level of Hannibal Lecter. anybody that smart and accomplished could probably get his satisfaction in other ways, but they're very good at what they do. Unfortunately,
sure. That's a very good point you've made there. Thank you very much indeed for that, Mark. Mark, really looking forward to having an opportunity to look at the book in detail, Mindhunter, Inside the FBI Elite Serial Crime Unit, from John Douglas and Mark Olsiger, the co-author. Wish you a lot of success with the new series, and as I say, We really, really should see disclaimers on the end of some of these programs.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and happy holidays.
And to you as well. Take care. Bye for now. Bye-bye.